Southern Fried Security Podcast with Martin and Steve, Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while Yvette's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 171 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. Year in review 2015. Predictions, maybe not so many predictions, and just a little bit of discussion. Hi, I'm Martin Fisher. I am so glad to be back for the last episode of the year. Once we're finished here, we will be going on hiatus until probably the second or third week of January. It's been an amazing year for the podcast. We thank all of you for hanging out with us as we went through our various troubles, travails, and all that other fun stuff. Joining me here tonight, unfortunately, it's not a full crew, but we do have his eminence, the Sparkles, Joseph Sicoli. Joseph, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, just peachy. It's a nice, cool, chill night here in the greater Metro Atlanta area. There are no complaints. Also with us from the great state of Indiana is our obligatory News Yankee, Steve Reagan. Steve, how are things?
Very good. Cooling off still. It's kind of cold here, but otherwise, it's been a good day.
It's late fall, getting to winter. You know, pretty soon you'll do nothing but complain about the ice and the snow and the wind and the polar vortex.
Yeah. Which I heard rumors of blizzards in the Midwest coming up soon, so get ready, buddy.
Outrage. Ooh, no.
So, yeah, we promised the listeners last week that we would revisit the predictions that we had made for 2015 and see how well we did. And then I do want to kind of talk about some major themes of what happened in 2015. I think it was a pretty interesting year in information security. And then, of course, Steve and I will be offering new predictions, while Joseph will once again be insisting it will be the year of the Linux desktop.
You heard it here first.
Absolutely.
For the second time.
This is like the fourth time in a row at this point. I'm just covering my bases because 1 year, I'm going to be right. And then everybody can come right back to me.
There was a Seinfeld episode like that, I think. So, Steve, what was your prediction for 2015?
So, we made a couple of obscure type predictions, but the ones that I put down as definitely going to happen was that we would see a lot of breaches related to outside influence, and in particular I mentioned supply chain problems, and that we would see that, you know, spike in 2015. And it turns out I was correct. And to just give you a couple of recent examples, you've got the Experian breach. So Experian gets breached, and it not only impacts Experian, obviously, but T-Mobile data was what was compromised. So you have two different companies that are compromised because one handled the data for another. And then after that, you've got, what was it, July, CVS had a photo print ordering website, and the company that provided that website and the back-end stuff was compromised. So it impacted CVS and a couple other pharmacies. I want to say Walgreens, but I can't find my notes. But the point being is, you know, those are two examples of outside influence impacting a supply chain. And then, of course, I said that a proper security company would be – or sorry, Joe asked if a proper security company be breached in any way, if he thought, you know, if we thought that would be something that happened. And naturally, if you really want to name a name, you got Hacking Team. They were completely and totally pwned.
Yeah, thanks for thanks for jumping in on that for me.
Oh, did I borrow your thunder?
Don't I think worry, you borrowed Joe. A little bit of my thunder.
That's okay, man. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You can talk about it again. Sorry, I was just reading through my notes.
No, you're good, man. You know, and you're right. Like, that was, you know, one of the sort of predictions that I made in there. I was kind of wishy-washy going back and listening back over. But you're right. I did say, as far as seeing a security company fully breached, and Hacking Team was definitely the best example of that. It wasn't any of the companies that I kind of expected. I was kind of thinking more like a McAfee or, you know, somebody along those lines. But I think Hacking Team definitely fit the bill on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the supply chain stuff, Steve, that you brought up, it's just starting. I mean, I think like any breach style, as people start realizing more and more how vulnerable it is, they go after it. And of course, you know, one of the things I always use to measure how vulnerable something is how many unsolicited emails and cold calls I get insisting that I have to protect, you know, my ex, whatever it is, from those dastardly advanced persistent threats.
See, this is probably why I would not be able to do your job, because I would get things like that and immediately ignore them, as it's just hype and they don't understand the problem. I wouldn't, if I started getting blasted with supply chain warnings, I would more than likely ignore them.
and you do. I mean, there's no way to keep up with all of the different things that we're told to be afraid of as we lead information security teams. But, you know, you read the first couple lines, because you have to assess what it is before you hit, you know, spam or delete or whatever. And there was a lot of, you know, protect your supply chain stuff going on this year, especially in healthcare. And that kind of gets to the prediction I had, which, thank God, the best of my knowledge, I believe, did not come true.
We did see a lot of stuff regarding, for example, the Hespira insulin pump research and things like that.
So the prediction was that we would see in a provider setting a compromised biomedical device leading to a patient safety issue. I phrased it very, very specifically. Because there's a lot of junk hacking going on right now in the biomed world. Now, what's interesting about the Hospira infusion pumps was that's the first time the FDA has gotten involved and acknowledged those devices were so insecure that they had to be you know patched or removed from the environment. That's a huge deal. That is a tectonic shift in the environment for the FDA to get involved like that. And I think it's a very, very positive thing. The biomedical industry moves very slowly. And it's not just because the industry doesn't want to innovate. They do innovate a lot. The challenge is the installed base of all these legacy machines are huge. There's hundreds of billions of dollars of these devices out there that are insecure and vulnerable and what have you.
And the age is, you know, not to be underestimated on some of these devices. I know that medical devices, you know, new products are planned to be in the field for 20 plus years.
Absolutely. It's not unusual to have 15 to 20 year old biomedical devices. I mean, I just walked through a medical office building today where some of the x-ray equipment was easily from, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, as long as it still met all of its, you know, radiation, you know, the safety requirements, it's absolutely still in service. Healthcare, especially when you start talking about, you know, not-for-profit community-based healthcare, where every dollar has got to be stretched incredibly far, they're not going to just replace a piece of biomedical equipment because it's, quote, you know, vulnerable to an information security problem, unquote. Until it's a patient safety issue, it's really hard to convince an administrator to remove those devices. And it's easy for us in information security to just, you know, pull our hair out and scream, "You idiot, why are you doing that?" But I've been in the healthcare industry long enough to realize if it's a choice of hooking someone up to something that's potentially insecure, or if you don't give them that treatment, they will die, it's a pretty easy decision. And that's, you know, that's a wonderful thing about healthcare, but it also leads, unfortunately, over the long term, to some pretty poor decision making, and we could talk about that another time.
Yeah, and your point on the FDA, you know, kind of brings to point one of the predictions that I made, which was that we would start to see the rumblings of legislation in regards to information security or cybersecurity, whatever you want to call it. My prediction was that we would see legislation kind of be proposed, and I don't think we've seen anything wide-reaching or particularly hefty yet, at least not in the form of anything that's really come through Congress, at least not to the best of my knowledge. But
there's the CISA, which is currently sitting out there. That's still more of a privacy thing than it is an information security thing. And, you know, following the recent attacks in Paris, I'm assuming we're going to even see more of the surveillance, encryption, privacy stuff
right
through Congress. But that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah. So your comment about the FDA, I know that there are rumblings, in the medical device field and things like that, where we may continue to see this kind of push towards legislation or push towards more government regulation in the form of information security stuff.
So, Andy, I'm glad you're back, my friend. So tell us, what was your prediction for last year?
Well, I didn't make one. As I was going back and listening to last year's show, we started off and you asked me about what I thought some of the top stories of last year were. And I commented on how I honestly hadn't had opportunity to pay much attention because of my schedule. And then we moved on and we never came back to ask me about predictions, which is actually just fine with me because I pretty much hate making predictions anyway. So,
well, to make up for last year, you will be first in line.
Oh, for stating
prediction. And you're not allowed to say anything like more of the same or anything like that. You've got to put yourself out there, my friend. So
happy now. See what you get for saying something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Could have just made anything up and then be like, and I was wrong. Drats and move on. But no.
So one of the things that I do want to kind of talk about before we actually get into our predictions for 2016 is talk about some of the major themes from 2015. And for me, and again, I know that what I do for a day job highly colors how I view the world. But 2015 seemed to be the year of the healthcare breach, electronic protected health information. I mean, between Anthem and Blue Cross of insert your favorite location here. We've just seen a load of attacks against healthcare providers, and in a lot of cases, specifically their data warehouse environments. It's been interesting in my industry in that it seems that information security has been taken much more seriously. I'm seeing a lot more attention being paid to it. We're seeing a lot more budget being applied, and it's interesting in that it looks like healthcare has finally gotten the religion and has realized that, yes, they are a target and the adversaries will come after them. And I'm hopeful. I think in order to protect those data sources, a lot of places are going to have to just improve their security 101 and their IT ops 101 stuff, which will improve the security of everything. But we're still in healthcare. We're years behind financial services, maybe even a decade behind financial services. And it's going to take us a while to get to where we really need to be.
Yeah, no disagreement there. I actually had a conversation on an airplane with someone as I was flying out towards California. And I said that healthcare was 5 years behind financial services. And the person in the row next to me leaned over and said, probably 10.
Yeah.
Just a fun anecdote, but it's, it does seem to hold true. But the good news is that there is, one of the things that I talked about in the show last year, which was that there is an increase in awareness, and that has just continued to increase over the past year. And while folks are still behind the ball, at least it's rolling at this point.
Yep. And I don't think it's going to slow down. It's not going to be like what we saw in retail and PCI, where everyone got themselves PCI compliant, wiped their hands, said done, and went back to a lot of bad behaviors. I think, and this is maybe me being too hopeful, but I think in healthcare, the people who are getting religion are understanding it, and they're making those fundamental changes they need to make to improve their environments.
So, I agree. Healthcare had a found religion moment this year, and there was certainly a large quantity of healthcare-related records compromised. But I think the larger arc when it came to security this year was that criminals started targeting PII at will, and they had a purpose for it. Earlier this year, the IRS had a huge problem with fraudulent tax returns. Right. And in a couple of stories I investigated and wrote, you know, medical companies are being targeted for the PII, including patients and doctors. And that information was being used to file tax returns. And then retailers are being compromised and their PII is being, you know, taken out of context and used. And then the IRS themselves get hit. And there was a huge spike in the amount of just straight up personal information that was compromised this year. And I think it's because while stolen card data is still valuable, there's so much of it in the marketplace now. It's not what it was anymore.
Like, the laws of supply and demand work in the cyber criminal ecosystem just like everywhere else.
Just as quickly, yeah.
So I do want to inject right there. So Yvette, who is not here to speak on her behalf, so I'm speaking on it for her. She said something about seeing one of the actual card processors be breached. And we didn't see anything significant like that this year, at least not to the best of my recollection. Do you think that that's kind of why?
No, I think so. If you look back at the major credit card runs that have happened, you can only flood the market so many times before the market gets tired of seeing it. Like just this week, just to use an example, this week on the darknet, five different Carter's markets opened up in the same week. And either they're all pulling from the same recycled data, or there have been, you know, massive breaches nobody knows about yet. But I'm going to go with my gut and say this is all recycled data. They're opening up different storefronts as a way to try and get as much of it off their plate as they can. Like even some of the cash out websites are doing really poor business right now because nobody wants to play with credit cards. It's easier to just take somebody's identification and then generate income from that. So it's a little bit of, I'm trying to think of how to word it, but you know, it's like Martin said, you know, it's supply and demand in this case, but the market's been flooded with compromised card data.
It's also return on investment, right? A swiped credit card is only going to be useful for a very short period of time because the card brands and the processors have gotten a lot better at detecting fraud and shutting them down.
Twice on average is how many times you can use a busted card. Yeah.
So, you know, if it's easier to get PII, and there's a rational argument that says it probably is, and you can use it longer and in theory make more money from it, why wouldn't you do that? Right? If it's less work and you get more money, you know, that's what human beings like. They don't want to work hard.
And the thing is, unlike credit cards that expire, get flagged or reissued, and you have to constantly keep compromising those, I may be able to file one or two false tax returns on your stolen ID. But at the same time, I could still use that ID to open up high-risk credit loans or credit accounts. I mean, you can potentially keep recycling that identification into new split identities. So, you know, Martin Fisher at your address in Georgia, same name, same date of birth, but now you're in Maryland. Now you're in Indianapolis. And just keep moving you around.
Yep. And that's what makes when your identity is stolen from you, that is, as far as I know, the closest thing to hell on earth that you can experience from being a crime victim. Because the victimization takes years to go away.
I was going to say, speaking from personal experience, it takes about 18 months, and it's an unbelievable amount of paperwork. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
So, Joseph, what theme were you seeing this year? What what sort of grabbed you and was like, if you had to pick like a theme for the year, what would it be?
You know, I was kind of thinking about that, and especially with kind of the events over the past couple of days and things like that, and some of the discussions that have come out post Paris, I think we're going to the theme that I saw this year, and I think we're going to continue to see, is really a focus on consumer privacy. You know, you started to see a lot of companies, Apple being a big one, that really focused a lot on consumer level encryption that is effective. You started to see, a focus on things like ad blockers and things along those lines. I think encryption, and I think seeing people really start to kind of take note of privacy features was kind of the theme over the year. And I think we're going to continue to see it throughout the next year.
So I think I agree and disagree with you. I think that for a certain segment of the population on the internet, that privacy and encryption and all was really important this year. I think for a very large number of people, it was a non-event. And I think some of it's a generational issue. You know, my parents really don't care. I'm willing to bet most of us, our parents really don't care. They just want the stuff to work. They're still using, you know, their AOL accounts, and they're very happy that way. And then if you start looking at, you know, middle-aged folks like me and Andy, a lot of them are just old dogs that aren't going to learn new tricks, and they just figure, you know, there's limitations of liability, and if I had anything to hide, I don't have anything to hide, so why am I worried? So I think there are a lot of concerned people, but my concern is there's a lot more that just don't see it as being something to worry, you know, to expend time and energy thinking about.
Yeah, no argument there. But I keep coming back to Apple because it's a space that I spend a lot of time, you know, reading on and things like that. But Apple is doing things like encryption and passcode requirements by default and things like that, basically making security something that's kind of baked in, that people don't really think about because a company has gone out of their way to make sure it's easy and effective.
Okay, so why did Apple do that?
Well, it's a marketing.
It's a liability issue, right? They don't want to be liable for being, you know, for having the ability to get into your stuff. So therefore, make it impossible, right? And that way, no national security letters can ever show up at their door.
And even if they did, there's nothing anybody can do about it.
Right.
And yeah, to continue your point, Joe, is the fact that one thing that has impressed me about Apple, which is saying something considering my stance on that company, they're training an entire new generation of consumers to inherently demand biometric security. They are training people right now.
Yeah, I know. And I
want that type of security, and I don't agree with it.
No, neither do I. I think there's so there.
But I like the concept of training the next generation of people to expect security to be baked in, to expect a certain level of confidence when you perform a transaction or access something. I like that.
Yeah.
And it's dual factor as well. It's not just a password. You know, it could be a password in your thumbprint or something on your phone. Or I like that small step forward. I'm encouraged by that, if that makes sense.
I am too. I think, you know, we can have a conversation about biometrics later. I mean, but in essence, I can always revoke your multi-factor token. It's really hard to revoke your thumbprint. That data gets compromised. So, but
yeah,
that's a conversation again for another day. So Andy, if you had to, I mean, again, yours is probably heavily influenced by the sector in which you work, but if you know, what sort of theme did you see for 2015 that kind of stuck out for you?
You know, when I was thinking about that, it was kind of difficult, primarily because some of the things that I have seen are things that I really can't talk about. I had to stop and think back on, okay, what have I seen that I can talk about that really would be, you know, influential? And this may be lame, I don't know, but I think probably just the even much more rapid adoption of cloud and not, you know, cloud took off very quickly in the consumer area. You know, everybody is always, you know, whether it's Google or Dropbox or OneDrive or whatever. But it seems like that now in industry and in business, that there's a much more of a drive to push everything to the cloud.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think also what's caused that is we're in that part of the phase where the late adopters are starting to pick it up.
Yeah. And I think too, people are getting much more comfortable with security in the cloud, and not that they necessarily have a valid reason to, but because there really hasn't been a whole lot of big news attacks that have been, you know, in the news. And so people are making assumptions that, and it kind of goes back to you know, good advertising, as well as kind of a mantra that, you know, that has been going around for the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, is that, you know, there's no way your company can have as good a security as a company the size of Amazon.
Right.
You know, and there's some truth to that, but there's that, you know, just because the company is that big and they're doing cloud as a major part of what they do, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily doing it right or as secure as it could be. But, you know, I guess that would be the theme that I would go back to this year.
Okay. So, guys, it's time to roll up our sleeves and decide what our predictions are for 2015. So I'm going to start with Steve. What for 2016? What's your 2016 prediction?
Wait, we agreed. Andy goes first. Why do you got to pick on me?
Because I'm the new old host. I'm shifting stuff around. I'm keeping people on their edge. You go first. I want to give Andy a little bit more time to think.
All right, so we're going to see a continuation with the trend of targeting PII, but I also think we're going to see more platform-based attacks in the coming years. Give you an example here recently. Amazon at AWS, you know, if you want to start hosting apps in the cloud, they released this security tool that you can use to, you know, look for common vulnerabilities and things like that. And with this service that Amazon puts out, I'm quite confident that business leaders are going to see that as a good thing, and they're going to start doing more cloud-based deployments. Somebody's going to target that security tool, figure a way to get around it, and that's going to lead to attacks, because they've basically violated that short-sighted trust in this one particular silver bullet that was being offered.
All right, Andy, you're up. What's your prediction for 2016?
I almost hate to say it, but I think we're probably going to see something that's going to be a lot more disruptive in terms of critical infrastructure. I think we're going to see an attack that's going to hit something. And I don't know how major it will be, you know, in terms of the outages or the impact of it. But I think we're going to see an attack that's going to be aimed at and I don't know what area of critical infrastructure, but something that's going to that's going to happen. That's going to have the potential to be very, very impactful and very serious.
All right, Joseph, what are you thinking?
Well, I think that in 2015, we really started to see the medical field really start to stand up and take notice of information security and the challenges it faces. I think 2016 is going to be the year that we really start seeing the hammer come down. I think we're going to start seeing FDA regulations. We may see some legislation from Congress. We're going to see the year of the Linux desktop. But I think we are going to see, you know, I'm actually taking an optimistic prediction this year, which is that we're going to continue to see companies really start to take security seriously.
Okay, well, actually, I think it's more likely you have a better chance of the year of the Linux desktop than anything getting through our dysfunctional Congress. So we'll just leave that there. So I guess my prediction, you guys have all been talking about the different kind of flavor of attacks that we might see. I want to focus on defense. You know, one of the things we've continually talked about is that the people and the technologies we have can only scale so fast. Especially on the signature-based side, where you're having to, you know, figure out an attack. Someone's got to write a script or a signature or whatever, distribute it. I think for me, we started seeing this in the last third of 2015. I think 2016 will become much bigger. Is the whole concept of machine learning, where you're going to set appliances or devices on your network that are going to marinate for a while, learn what's normal, and then start just taking autonomous actions on it. I'm familiar with a company called Darktrace out of the UK that is doing some of this. A lot of other vendors, I'm seeing a lot of, you know, machine learning is sort of becoming potentially the new APT when it comes to buzzwords. And it wouldn't surprise me if in RSA we see a lot of machine learning talks going on. But I think that's what's happening. The challenge has always been, from the attacker perspective, the attackers can iterate faster than the defenders, always. So how do we iterate faster as defenders? We get people out of the cycle and let the machines handle it. The downside there is eventually you get Skynet. And I, for one, will welcome our cyber defense overlords.
Related to that, unfortunately, we did not see the Southern Fried Skynet go online, despite us talking about it last year.
Well, I keep telling you that we need to upgrade that laptop from Windows ME. It'll run on NT4.0. So, well, guys, that wraps it up. We will have to check this out again in a year to see which of us came closest to actually having our predictions actually pan out. So on behalf of the missing Yvette Johnson and everybody here at the Southern Fried Security Podcast, again, we thank you for hanging with us this year. We hope you enjoy your holidays here in the U.S. I hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving and your Christmas, your Kwanzaa, your Hanukkah, whatever winter festivities you have. We hope you enjoy them, and we will be back with you in January talking about the stuff we always talk about. So thanks very much. Have a great evening, and guys, let's grab some sweet tea.
Sounds
safe and happy holidays, everyone.
Good night, y'all.